is CKUW 95.9 FM, 25 years in your ears, Winnipeg.
Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist, Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now. Hey there, Cyrus.
Hey, Marianne.
Great to see you today.
Great to see you.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah, we got a good topic today.
Yeah. Whoa. I was thinking about how do we know when we can trust people? Like, there's signs. There's what you can look for in people that you can feel safe with. And oftentimes it's not your direct family, but there's another way we can look at family. So I wanted to talk about that. Let's dive in.
Yes.
Who is your family?
Right. Such a good question. And it kind of feels like it should be obvious, right? It's like, well, I know who my family is. And typically we mean our biological family, but I think there's a deeper question there. It's like, is your mother your mother? Is your father your father? Is your sister really your sister? Like, who are they?
Yeah.
And I think if you ask that question, a lot of people are like, oh, my mom isn't really my mom.
Right.
And my dad isn't really my dad. And it can all of a sudden become quite a meaningful conversation and quite powerful.
Who is your family if it's not your blood? Now, of course, a lot of people have wonderful families. And so this isn't to knock and say, you know, they're not good enough. This isn't who I would call my mother. I have more of a mother figure in this other person. Like, okay, let's look at how dissatisfied we are with who's in our lives. And no, I don't want to do that to people. I don't want to drive dissatisfaction and make you feel like you're looking at everybody with heavy criticism now because you have closer relationships, perhaps developed, especially as an adult. Perhaps somebody did start showing up more in that role that felt more motherly.
Totally. And I think your point is well put, because I think there is a movement more towards disowning your family. I mean, as the boundaries idea has grown, you know, it's so funny because everything's a good idea, but sometimes you can take almost any idea to an extreme. So the boundaries have grown. Boundaries are great. But one of the challenges that started to happen, which is, I think, getting people wondering, is this idea of people disowning their families and cutting off all ties with their biological families. Is that okay? Is that right? And I don't know if we're here to destroy things. Obviously, boundaries can be a good thing, and I want people to be safe, but it takes a lot of wisdom. Boundaries aren't always a simple thing, and they take a lot of thought and discernment. But hopefully, we're not here to destroy, but to understand and build up. Build up other relationships. Build up your relationship with your bio family to understand it better. I find that typically when people understand family better and what family means, I find that they often will have a better time getting along with their biological family and all of their weaknesses because their expectations potentially shift around where they're getting what.
And if you're focusing on the weaknesses, perhaps look first at yourself and see where am I not showing up for this person. If I'm asking this question, how could I be a better mother? How could I be a better sister? How could I be showing up more for these ones who are calling me family? Am I doing that word justice?
Right.
What does justice on the word family even look like?
Totally. Oh, I think this is like that first level would be biological, right? Like, who's my biological family? And you've kind of moved on to, I think, a really big second step, which is who is your family relationally? And you started with yourself, which is like, am I being motherly? Am I being fatherly? You know, as often as I talk about this, which comes up, you know, somewhat fairly often with clients or in the church or other people, it's interesting. Nobody's ever really argued with me that these things aren't important. Even if people are like, my mother's not my mother, my dad's not my dad, nobody really says, I don't need a dad or I don't need a mom. Like, it's interesting that as frustrating as family can be at times, or as painful or traumatizing, people seem to have a deep understanding, or it feels right to say, we want family. Now, I've had people say, I don't want family, or I don't like to talk about family. I've had people say, I'm taking a break from family, or I'm leaving family. But I mean, if you walk around the conversation with people long enough, typically it's not because they don't want it. it's because they've been so hurt by it. It feels so scary. Just to take that first step and be like, we want family, like these roles we want. You know, if you think about these archetypes, what are these roles like? What are they built for? It's like, we want somebody to care for us. We want somebody to teach us. We want somebody to plow the way for us. We want somebody to be with us in the storm. We want somebody to be connected to us, even when we disagree. We want somebody to be connected and committed to us in a way that they're a positive, helpful influence, even when we've messed up, even when we've hurt them. We want people who are committed, who are there to love us through the storm. And I really can't see a way around that. I think we're built for family. So I think it's a super critical question to be like, okay, how do I find this in my life and who's doing it?
Yes. First, forgive the lack of capacity in the person that didn't show up, even if it was yourself. Forgive yourself for the lack of capacity in an area. And it might not be all areas. It might just be a handful of things.
Yeah, definitely.
But those were the highlights for you because the pain is often more highlighted than the good. And so those are what triggers constantly in the focus and the ruminating. And a lot of our listeners are familiar already that negativity ends up being the greater bias. And so you have to make a deliberate choice to think more positively. So forgiving the lack of capacity, how they didn't show up, how you didn't show up.
I think it's huge to kind of realize first who you are and then to be able to have mercy on yourself when you see that disparity, right? One thing that's interesting, just as an exercise you could do, is just ask the question and try to answer it relationally. Like, who is my dad to me? And it might be like, well, he's actually a little bit more like a employer. Or maybe he's actually a little bit like a distant cousin. Or maybe he's a little bit more like a terrorist. You know, it's like, it's just interesting. Like, who is this person in my life, you know? And if you try to define it relationally, if it was like, they're not my dad, or they might be, but I'm going to just loosen that up and be like, what is this person to me? And you can do that for yourself too. Who am I to people? How do I treat people? If I was trying to look at myself through the eyes of other people, how am I actually relating to them? And what are the words that we have to describe relationships that would best describe myself in relationship? It's an interesting thing to see what words you might actually find.
And if your words are terrorist, that one stood out to me.
Yeah.
Like, if it's awful, if it's this word, is that the whole truth?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, back to the question about the capacity is like, okay, that's the overall way. And it makes me feel good because I can somehow protect my heart from the pain of actually forgiving.
Yeah.
Because walking through forgiveness for the person who didn't show up for you means that you're allowing? No, they can't get away with it. You need to punish them. So that's the misconception about what the journey to forgiveness would be, to not label as a terrorist, because you need to be able to then let it go. And punishment is a whole lot more, I don't know, what, soothing? It continues this beautiful pity party you've really, really been enjoying. And maybe you don't know. You're not enjoying it.
Yeah.
But somehow it's this thing you've rehearsed and rehearsed. And it's just important to be able to balance this.
Yes.
Like, what's some of the truth now?
Yeah.
Some of the other truth, I mean. Like, where have they perhaps shown up as not a terrorist?
Right. I think you're so right. One of the things that's interesting, particularly about biological family, is that even if you're like, this person has hurt me in this way and this way, and it's been horrific, and you might have quite the story of pain, what's interesting is it's very difficult for people to actually completely cut out family members. There is a pull we have with our family, our biological family, that is very challenging to completely overcome, which I think is almost, I mean, if we were to go next to the next level and say spiritual, it's almost this interesting thing that we have with our family where we have this connection. And I believe we have it with everybody. I believe that there is a connection. We are called to love, and I believe that that kind of manifests just naturally in ourselves, in our personalities to some extent, particularly with our biological family. I think there's this kind of spiritual, emotional, relational draw to our family. And I think that's God's design on our hearts, is to be connected. So even if you have somebody who is, you know, hurting you, and it could be emotionally, it could be physically, it can be very difficult to pull apart, which is where you get to this other side of which is if you can see the reality, if you can be like, okay, this is true. And not just the terror or the pain, but also like oftentimes there's a mix which can be confusing and all these kind of things where it's, oh, there's these good moments, there's these bad moments or whatever that looks like. If you can really understand it and see it as clearly as you can, it's so important because you probably need to relate to this person in the future. And I'm kind of saying it's probably even a real relationship of some level. Like, you probably want to know when they're sick. You probably want to know what's going to happen in their life. You're probably going to see them at a wedding or something like that. Now, there's cases where people actually do completely never see somebody again, or the person goes to jail or something like that, and you never do. But it's so frequent that you have to relate to this person. And so to see it clearly, but then to look through the lens of connection, what I usually find is once you see the person clearer, you also potentially will see a road to relate to that person. Because typically what happens is people will come into this relationship, they'll just see it as like, well, they're my dad or they're my mom. And they'll try to relate to them as a mom. But if you see them as like, oh, this is actually what they're like, hopefully what you can do then is still look through a lens of love and be like, oh, but I can still connect in this way. This is still safe for me. And it's not going to injure myself. I'm not going to continually put myself in the line of fire, but I can still reach out in this context because I still feel this bond. I still feel this family responsibility. I still feel this need to honor my family, my brother, my cousin. I need to do that. And so once you clearly see it, typically there can be a path, an edge, where you can still relate to the person.
And perhaps it's only a small path, a little edge of just a small piece you can take that allows that person, because they have truly consistently shown up negatively
and
more hurtful. But there's still a portion and there's still that small part that could be met. So consistency is an important thing to evaluate where a relationship can stand, how easily you can keep going with someone if they're showing up with compassion, kindness, gentleness, and they're interested in the relationship and they're there for you and you want to be there for them, and there's compatibility. There's so many other words I can use. And actually, I want to get to that too. But then there's the flip side where it's not all those things. So if it's consistently good, then try not to highlight the bad. It's more good than bad. So focus on that. Your paths are many and greater, and you know, you have a lot more ways to be able to work out things that work out in that relationship. Whereas if it's consistently bad, then you don't have as many, but it still doesn't mean none.
Right. It's very difficult. Yeah. I think one of the ways to think about this, just in a simple way as well, is that if you can line up your relationship more with reality of what this relationship is, often it actually helps a relationship to flourish. So I'll give you an example. So let's say that you have a sister and you really want a relationship with your sister. You want a daily conversation with your sister on the phone for an hour. You're like, I love my sister and I want her to be a sister to me. And to me, being a sister means an hourly daily conversation. Your sister's like, I don't want an hourly daily conversation. You're like, well, you're not my sister. And it's like, okay, well, that doesn't feel like a sister to me. So then what are you? Like, you want a conversation once a month. And that feels to me more like a maybe a friend, you know, not a good friend, but a friend. And it's like, okay, well, if you kind of figure that out and you have your conversation then once a month with your sister, all of a sudden you might find that your sister is relating to you better. You might find that your sister is like happy to hear your phone call and speaks to you more gently and positively. And all of a sudden, maybe because of that, you actually get to 2 phone calls a month because you're now having positive conversations instead of her, you know, dodging your phone calls and being frustrated with you because it's another phone call day after day after day. And so if you can actually see what the relationship is, kind of properly understand what it means to you, and then, you know, not necessarily just doing exactly what the person wants, that's not what I'm talking about, but if you understand that and kind of find that common ground, oftentimes you can actually improve the relationship. And this can even go for quite, you know, even dangerous relationships. It's harmful for you to be harmed, obviously. This is the way we typically think about it. If you're in a relationship with somebody who's abusive and you get abused, that's harmful for you. there's another way to look at it too, which is like if you're in an abusive relationship and they abuse you, it's harmful for them. It's harmful for everybody. And so if you can actually get into a relationship that's safe, maybe you can still talk to your father, but you don't actually go in person with them. There's all kinds of services in the government or different ways of relating to people that can actually make a relationship safe again for you. All of a sudden, your relationship could potentially take a step forward. I don't know exactly how far, but they're relating to you maybe with more respect. I'll give you another example. You know, it's like, oh, it becomes abusive when this person is drinking. So it's like, well, I can meet with them in the morning and then they're not using alcohol at that time. And so then your relationship actually improves, even though you're seeing the person less or in a particular way only. And so, yeah, understanding what a relationship really looks like can help you to put in steps that could actually help you improve that relationship when you see what it is.
Yeah, and they still need to show up in that morning visit with the kinds of character values and traits that are compatible. I think compatible could be a very nuanced word. Like some people are compatible with people who are only ever jerks and they like to just treat people badly and then they're all in these groups of people that want to treat people badly and that's not what I'm talking about.
Totally.
It exists.
Yeah.
But what we're leaning towards is positivity, help, healing, safety, and people that are trustworthy. And even if you're experiencing them as trustworthy only in the morning, because at nighttime, if they're overly drunk, they really don't handle themselves well and aren't showing up as a kind person. I think that that's a way to weigh some of that.
Totally.
It's like, what are the values? What character values do you want to see show up in your life?
Totally. And I think the third step, so there's that biological, who is your family? And like, then there's the relational, like, how do you relate to people? If you have a draw to them, if you want to connect with them, how do you connect with people safely? Which we've been talking about. And then the third is often spiritual, which is like, how do you actually know who your dad is? Who is your mom? Who is your sister and your brother? And like, how do you measure that? Now, typically people would say like respect and kindness and all these kinds of things, which I think is true. It's funny, in the Bible, Jesus gives this other idea, which is those who do the will of his father. And it's an ultimate test to say like, who can you really let into your life? Not just like, I'm going to just get along with people and try to understand who they are and relate to them as I can, that's safe and healthy and good for me. But like, who am I really going to let in as my mother? Who am I really going to let in as my father? And that has a fair chance of not being your biological family. And so then who do you look for? Where do you find these people? And what has God given you to actually figure that out? And he has. He says, not just people who want to do my will, not just people who even profess Jesus as Lord. It's like people who have gotten to a maturity level where they're doing my will, where they are moving in this. Those are the people that you can have more of that open kind of relationship with.
Yes. Who is my mother and my sister and my brothers? When Jesus was in a house, people had come to tell him that they were outside waiting, his very own flesh and blood. Mother and brothers are here to see you. And he stops them and says, who are they? And just in a relaxed way, he doesn't make any big effort to go out and see them. And, oh, my mother. He's like, they are the ones who are doing the will of my father. Those are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. So thinking about the ones that are doing the will, and his will is to be kind. His will is that you would be loving. And that's pretty easy to spot.
Yeah. Yes. It's a wonderful thing. Now, obviously, there's some people who are very blessed in that it's like, oh, my biological family is that to me. And it's like, yay, everybody can applaud and it's wonderful. And we don't want to discourage that at all. If it all lines up, that's great. However, this is hope, because it means that if you don't have that, it doesn't mean that God has abandoned you. It's like, no. His eyes are searching, you are searching for those people that you can open your heart to. And he's kind of saying, hey, it's like, you can find this. I will help you. I will provide you with a family. And ultimately, I mean, this is the ultimate, is he is your father. And he can be your family, because He is doing the will of the Father. Jesus is doing that, and he can be present with you always, even as you search and as you find people. Because I think he, for the most part, he wants us to have a community. He wants us to have a human family as well. I think that's his heart for us to understand even him, to know who he is, that he speaks through each other and gives us families, spiritual and otherwise, to help us to know what he is like. But ultimately, he is that one who is trustworthy in that full, full sense.
And how he showed up for people.
Mm-hmm.
He was protective of the little ones. Mm-hmm. And anyone who would hurt a little one, he even said, it's better if there's a millstone hung around your neck and you drop into the sea. He was pretty harsh about it. Like, he was protective
of
people who were being abused. And so he stood up for people who were being bullied. And he was not afraid and not ashamed to be able to say, you guys are hurting people boldly. And so there was a way of showing up that wasn't just this gentle. He was gentle. But in a way where it was just mild. Was mild. But he was also passionate. And protective.
He's very protective.
And
that's so important. We have to see him that way. He's making room for people to not continue to open up their hearts and their lives in the most vulnerable way in order to be destroyed. I mean, obviously, he'll call people into, you know, different purposes in their lives and missions. And I remember working in, you know, potentially dangerous situations. I'm not saying that Jesus did dangerous things. But to just say, oh, you have to open up your heart to somebody who doesn't do my will is not God. That's not what he says. He is, like you said, he's protective of the children. He's protective of you. And there's a path that he has for you, which includes him protecting you and saying, like, yeah, there's going to be hard people. I'm calling you to love people, but not necessarily open your heart fully to every person who crosses your path, because they are not your mother and your father. They are people you are ministering to. And, of course, we live in the gray. You know, there's always more, there's always less. But we are called to be discerning around those vulnerabilities. And to be aware, if you open your heart, are you opening it to your mother and your father? Or are you opening it as a mission? Or what are you doing? Just be aware of that and what he's calling you to.
Yeah. Being trampled on is not his will.
Right.
He doesn't want you to get abused. He still wants you to experience his love through people who are capable of loving you. And like I said, maybe the people that have less capacity showing up are the ones that you would really want that from. But just because you're not getting it from, with the exception of maybe a small area, you will have others. There are many there that will be like a mother and a father and brothers and sisters and family that will be showing up as doing the will of the Father, that do have the capacity to love you.
Yeah, which is wonderful. It's wonderful that he doesn't just leave us alone. And for us to be able to kind of learn his ways and learn how to see this, learn how to discern people who do his will, learn how to be able to do that ourselves for others. We can be family and not only just receive family. These are things that he wants to teach us. He wants to build us up into these things. And it's beautiful. He wants us to love, and he wants us to learn how to love.
Learning comes through his word. Scripture is amazing for being able to find out what his character is. And reading about who he is to know his will, that's how you'll find it. So if you're looking for who's doing the will, looking in Scripture is a really good place to find out what that is.
What and that looks like.
Who's showing up like that around you.
Yeah, for sure. I think it can be so amazing to see somebody who just keeps banging their head against, it's like, well, this is the person, this is my biological mother who's supposed to be doing this for me, and I'm going to keep asking for it and asking for it and asking for it. It can be wonderful to watch somebody go through the process of like, oh, they're my biological mother, but they're not mothering me. And this is actually what they're like. And this is how I can actually relate to them, if I can. And then there's also freedom to maybe find care and compassion and nurturing from somebody else. And for them to find that person, it's life transforming to open yourself up and not just continually bang your head against something that is just not happening for you. And that's what we want. We want you to be able to step back from something that's just damaging and go into something that can give you life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The life that I've often felt I was missing from those who didn't show up for me was then often found in the ones who did, because they were the ones doing the will of my Father. I remember him gently showing me that in my heart. I felt him say, those who are meant to love you will.
That's wonderful.
When I was feeling that they weren't the ones that I hoped would.
Right, yes. Oh, that's well put.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Cyrus.
Thank you, Marianne.
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at maplecrestchurch.ca and at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose.
Time we've got all night. Show me the rivers crossed, the mountains scaled. Show me who made you walk all the way here. Settle down, put your bags down.
The pain when you're ready, we'll turn the page together. Open the bottle, it's time to celebrate who you were, who you are, we're one and the same.
This is Scott from Absent Sound, but the sounds here on CKUW are very